This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks. Good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. In the studio today, we've got a full lineup, and for the show. But I think some of our studio crew members are still sitting in traffic. I believe it's pretty hectic out there. So in studio at the moment, I have Martin Pretorius, who's recently joined the Auto Trader team. He's been writing for us for a while. Martin, welcome to Auto Central.
Hello, Aaron. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Tell me, was that Fazana arrived and she was like, oh my gosh, I've been in traffic for 2 hours. Hello, Fazana.
Hi, Tyler.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, good, thank you. So was it crazy out there?
2.5 hours from Pretoria to here.
2.5 hours from Pretoria to here. Yeah. I also left early this morning and it wasn't too bad. I only sat for an hour.
You're lucky. Very lucky.
My scooter broke down last week and I haven't had a chance to take it to get fixed yet. So I was crying inside because I knew I had to get into a car this morning and fight traffic. So were there accidents or anything?
I passed one.
There was an accident on the M1 South.
M1 South.
Which kept everything all the way from about Midrand dammed up.
Oh, gosh, geez, Locke. So it must be a real, you know, balls up out there, to be completely honest. Some interesting news. Not really news, but just something that I witnessed on the road yesterday. You never really expect to, you know, you see accidents and stuff like that. But I was coming back from a mate's place, and they stay out Centurion, near Lanseria, Blair Athol, and driving home. And when I got to Witkoppen Road, there was this huge, what looked like I thought was a roadblock, but it wasn't, because then I realized it's actually a crime scene. And I saw, you know, there was a white Polo with a body slumped over the driver's seat.
Yes.
And I actually went cold. It was not a nice thing to see. It obviously had just happened, so, you know.
No, that's a chilling experience.
Not very, very nice, and not something that we want to be seeing on our roads. They're dangerous enough as it is. And let's just jump straight into it. There was an absolute full week. A lot of news coming out of the motor industry last week, and I think one of the biggest stories is, VW have been caught after they had tested diesel emissions on some of their cars, but they used monkeys as test samples, which really, really wasn't nice, you know. So I see that there's a gentleman by the name of Thomas Stig, who is their chief lobbyist, and he's also the head of the external relations. The way I read and I sum it up is there's always got to be a fall guy, and I kind of think that, you know, obviously this would have been signed off by him, and he's had to step down for the test that were conducted in 2015. What's your take on that? I mean, surely we shouldn't be testing these kind of things on animals in this day and age. Surely we've got enough technology to, we can invent machines that can give us the results that we want.
Well, we already have the machines, and the medical research has already been done. We already know exactly what the effect of everything is on the human.
Yeah.
So to test on animals at this stage, while we already know what's going on, I think that's pretty much immoral.
Yeah. Look, I don't think it's right. And when you actually read about what the study was, where they had these 10 monkeys locked up in a confined room for 4 hours while they were, you know, playing cartoons for these animals, and they're obviously just pumping the room with these emissions to get a kind of result, because afterwards they did endoscopes into the windpipes via the mouth or the nose of the monkeys to kind of see how the land was like, to see how these animals have been affected. And I don't know, it just doesn't sit well with me. And I think the biggest concern that I have is, does this impact our brand locally? I mean, VW is such a strong brand in South Africa. It really is. They've got it's got a great name. It's got a great reputation. If you look at autotrader.co.za in terms of search volume, VW ranks up there in terms of vehicles that are searched for. Does something like this have a negative effect on the brand, on the grandeur in South Africa? I mean, just your opinions. Faz, what do you say? Let's start with you.
I think it may have, but not as big as it may overseas, like amongst animal rights people and stuff. But I think for the most part, it's not going to affect VW sales or anything.
Yeah, no, it won't affect us in South Africa at all. With the first Volkswagen emission scandal. It had absolutely no effect on Volkswagen sales in South Africa.
Because there was, what, 11 million cars. I mean, you know, and to be honest, and I haven't done the show with you, I'm not a petrol head. Mm-hmm. I understand the industry and what's going on. And I mean, we sat, and we're going to get into where we were last week, obviously, with Coty. But I just sat in awe. I mean, I sat and listened to you guys having conversations. And I was like, how do you guys remember all that stuff? You guys probably know what spark plug was put in an Escort that was built, you know, 25 years ago.
It was a BP 6
You see what I mean?
Martin, more so than anybody.
Okay, so, you know, Martin, just quickly, as an individual, where did that love for cars stem from? Like, what, you know, where's the passion come from?
I think it was born with petrol in my veins.
Okay.
I've been car crazy since the age of, four, mm-hmm. pretty much. So, basically, from the time I could walk. So, I went to varsity, studied in the field of mechanical engineering. And worked in the motor industry my entire adult life.
Okay. And it's just part of who you are now.
Yeah.
You know? So they say the rest is history. So I see this, you know, this whole scandal, obviously, you know, it's been you know, VW are the ones that have to take in the fall. Hello, George.
How's it, Ty?
How are you doing?
Can you?
Traffic?
Yeah, I heard you talking about it on the way in.
No, I did. You? Okay. Well, nice to know that you listen to the show when you're not on it.
Ha ha ha. No, it's turn that up. Since I've come back from holiday, I thought to myself, okay, maybe week one, you know, the traffic's worse, you know, and I haven't changed my routine in terms of what time I leave. All that stuff. But the traffic's just got worse.
Well, Martin sat for 2.5 hours.
I heard that.
I sat for 2 hours.
Yeah. So I thought maybe, you know, it's the first 2 weeks of January, maybe the first 4 weeks of January. We went to the first week of February, nothing's changed.
Mm. Yep. Yeah.
So I'm going to have to change my habits now.
You're going to have to change your habits.
And begin leaving home a bit earlier. So,
But so anyway, what we're chatting about is obviously, you know, the news that came out last week that there's been another scandal at VW, obviously testing emissions on some of their diesel engines on animals, which you know,
oh goodness,
it doesn't sit nicely, and you know, I can understand why people get upset, because I don't, like I said to the guys, I don't think in this day and age we should be testing these kind of things on animals.
Is it verified as true?
It is verified as true.
Okay.
From the research, I mean, Daimler even on Daimler's website, they've released a statement saying that, you know, they do not condone what has happened. There are four manufacturers that are part of you know, they're funding, you know, this research house that actually, you know, outsourced this piece of research.
But it actually goes further than that.
Okay.
Last week, Monday, a report also transpired in The Guardian. I have it open here in front of me. That Volkswagen not only tested on monkeys, but on humans as well.
Well, you see, I believe that's also true. But, you know, there's another article as well that said the Dutch have done human animal tests, diesel tests for years. But the way they've done it is they actually will write out how the research is going to go down, what they're researching for, what the outcomes they expect to be. They get that signed off by animal rights groups. They get it signed off by government. So everybody that knows how this test is going to work knows what the effects on the animal or the human are going to be. I mean, they've tested on healthy humans and humans who aren't so healthy. So, I mean, it's really crazy. I mean, you know, when we traveled overseas when we were youngsters...
I suppose human tests, you get the consent of the human.
Absolutely. So, you know. So that's the thing.
There's tests going on all the time with
humans. And I think there have to be tests, but rather tests on humans, guys. It's okay, cool. You know, I'm happy to, you know, breathe in.
At least they'll know what they're up for.
Exactly, because they can make, like George says, you know, they can make a decision on whether they should or shouldn't happen.
Still, I don't think it should happen.
No, look, I don't think testing on animals should be done. But, you know, we know that it's been happening for years. Rats, mice, bunnies, guys have tested on all these kind of things.
And
so
it's not the only industry.
No, we can't just point a finger here. And I think, you know, when guys are developing products and they want to do, they want to run tests,
I think one of the biggest culprits is the makeup industry.
Yes, definitely.
The makeup industry tests a lot of, it does a lot of animal testing.
I mean, you've seen how nice a rat looks with lipstick on.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, so this Thomas Stig, obviously, you know, being taking the fall for this scandal, and we'll obviously have to see what comes out of it in the next couple of weeks. TransUnion Vehicle Pricing Index. Nice to see that there's been quite a strong move on the in the new vehicle segment with new cars, obviously. What does it say? The TransUnion SA Vehicle Pricing Index for new and used vehicle pricing moved from 2.4% and 3.5% in quarter four of 2017. And that on the new cars, it's down from 9.4%, and in used cars, it's gone from 3.3% to 3.5%. So looks like there's going to be a little bit more spending in the new car segment in 2018. Which
yeah,
is, which
I mean,
is
it has to ebb and flow. We saw the swing to used cars, and then you know, we see these cycles.
Yes.
On an ongoing basis, it just ebbs and flows, and you know, people then start buying used cars, and then eventually, when the economy starts to recover, which hopefully we're seeing now, and that's an indicator. Rand's recovered nicely; it's on 12 rand to the dollar.
Yep.
I think it was under 12 rand to the dollar last week. Mm. And then when people have more money, it swings towards new car.
Yes.
I think the only thing that South Africa suffers from still is high levels of debt.
Yes.
And you know, when there's a little bit of extra cash and cash flow, people go out and buy new cars because they can get the finance for it.
Yes.
And
they can afford it in that period of their
buoyant period. Yeah. And maybe that's a double-edged sword.
Sure.
So it makes the car industry buoyant, but on the other hand, the consumer gets themselves into.
Well, I mean, I saw some of the newspaper headlines driving out this morning that there might be a 2% increase on VAT. Or was it tax?
Mm-hmm.
VAT. VAT will go from 14 to 60, and that's obviously going to affect everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I've always maintained the best source of income for a country is value-added tax.
Yeah.
I'd rather personally have a lower personal income tax rate and a lower company tax rate than and a higher VAT rate, because VAT is the point at which everyone pays.
Yes.
It's when you spend the money that everyone pays. So you know, if the VAT rate's going up, at least let the consequence be the other tax rates come down. You know, your personal income tax rate and company tax rates, so that it balances the scales a little bit, because the informal traders are the ones that that often don't pay tax. And value-added tax is the way in which the government, or a mechanism in which the government can use to make those individuals pay tax. So it's not entirely a bad thing.
No.
But I think that the other tax rates should come down.
Yeah.
As a consequence.
But all in all, good news for the motor industry that we are seeing some kind of changes and shifts. I see in quarter four of 2017, which is obviously, you know, what we're doing now, that 2.2 used vehicles for every one new car sold. And that ratio will obviously change now with what they're
predicting. 2.2 is pretty high. It's evidence of the swing to used. Mm. So if that's the peak, it'll come down.
Yeah, I see that they were also saying that obviously with the change now, the amount of quality used cars in the marketplace is obviously reduced, because there was an uptake on, and people were buying, you know, used.
Yeah.
So you know, the stock holdings have got a little bit smaller.
Well, that happens with a swing to used cars. Yeah. So you know, when the consumers start buying up the stock in the market, it's very difficult for dealers to find good used stock.
And that will obviously push the price of those used cars up.
It makes the price of the used car be more buoyant, which means that the values don't drop as fast, hence the report that says the price index remains on an increase.
Yeah.
But that's just the lack of stock. It's just plain old economics, supply and demand.
Yeah. And I mean, you would have seen this before in the industry. This is something that ebbs and flows, and this is what happens.
It goes
a cycle
up and
that
down.
We follow.
It's a cycle.
Okay, fantastic. Well, it's good news for anyone out there who is looking to acquire a new vehicle, whether it's new or used. Seems like news the way to go at the moment.
Yeah, what would be interesting to watch is what segments of new become buoyant.
Okay.
So, are consumers moving from bigger used cars and more expensive used cars to the smaller new, the little runabouts, the i10s and i20s, Picantos, or are they going for the bigger new cars? So, you know, that'll be an indicator of where the consumer is in this economic environment.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, that's all good, and that's pretty much the first segment. So we'll keep an eye on that. I just wanted to ask quickly, this the defeat device that these guys put on these vehicles. Can you just unpack that in layman's terms to me? I'm assuming that it's right. something that is... Okay, well, you go because you know what you're talking about.
It's not an actual device per se. It's,
okay.
It's actually a few lines of code inside the engine control unit, which recognizes when the car is being tested for emissions. And then it adapts itself accordingly to perform well in the test cycle. In fact, there's a term for that. They call it beating the cycle.
Oh, wow.
Sure. Okay.
So every car is optimized to perform well in this test cycle.
Yes.
But most cars perform equally well if driven under similar conditions out on the road. The defeat device comes in where the car actually recognizes when it's being tested.
Oh, wow.
And then it slips into another mode, which is the clean exhaust mode. And that's where it runs for the duration of the test. And as soon as you put it off the test rig, it goes back to the normal default mode as you drive it on the road.
Hmm.
Clever.
Smart, eh? Very smart.
That's very smart.
Okay, well, you know, now we know how that works. Is that is it legal?
Well, it's a bit of a grey area. You see some of these defeat devices are actually used as a protection mechanism.
Okay.
In other words, if the engine's temperature goes too high, or if it's a cold, right after a cold start, or conditions like those, it also goes into a different mode.
Okay.
The trick is they have to declare these test cycle modifications to the authorities.
Okay.
And that's actually where FCA in America is now running into problems as well.
Okay.
They had, I think the last I read was 8 recognized test cycle modifiers. And they didn't declare all of them.
Oh,
and that's why they're now facing, I think, $4 billion fine in the US.
Jeez,
wow.
So that can actually get you into a lot of hot water. So it's fine to have it, but you obviously got to declare it, which makes complete sense.
You have to declare the purpose,
why it's there.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, talking about purpose and why it's there, we're going to move straight on to our F1 segment. And no news, obviously, coming out of, from racing results and drivers and stuff like that. But something that a lot of people are up in arms about is I see that no more grid girls at races.
Are they up in arms because of the positive or the negative?
Well, I listened. Richard Mulholland was actually talking about it this morning on Gareth to Ben. And what he was saying is, and there's obviously two sides of the story. There are people who are going, this is nonsense. And it's not right, and it's discriminating, and we're just putting these women out there for show, and it benefits the guys, and it helps make men more rich. But then on the flip side, there are pit girls who go, hang on a sec, I'm starting to be a doctor, I'm starting to be a lawyer. This is something that I choose to do. I choose to wake up in the morning, and I choose to wear that outfit, and I'm happy to go and do this. So I don't know what the story is, but I think maybe let's just chat about it for 2 minutes. I mean, what is your take on it, George? I mean,
I have no opinion either way.
Yeah.
I think they perform a function,
mm-hmm.
But I get what the F1 is saying. Why can't they put a muscle-bound guy,
next
standing
to the
holding
with
the
umbrella,
equally as a ripped woman?
Yes.
So I think maybe they're taking the grid girls off the grid, which they shouldn't do. They should rather add the other element, which is guys.
So you get the buff,
you get the balance,
and then you get the little bit of both.
Exactly.
So what Richard and them were saying this morning is that these are other people that are screaming and shouting because they're getting offended on behalf of the grid girls. I don't think this hasn't come from the grid girls saying, oh, we don't want to do this job anymore. This is somebody else mm-hmm. is going.
Well, have the grid girls spoken out?
Well, there are a couple of clips and voice notes from grid girls who have just said, I'm happy to do it. If it makes me money. It's the same as them saying.
I mean, F1, from all the races I've watched, it doesn't look sleazy.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, you get some sports where it does become a bit sleazy.
Yeah.
But in F1's case, I haven't seen a situation where it's sleazy at all.
There's a comment passed as well. I mean, are they going to start taking ramp models off now because, she's wearing a bikini. How can she do that?
But welcome to 2018.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people just need to do what people want to do. And if it offends you personally, then you deal with the issue yourself. You don't have to deal, I'm not going to worry on your behalf because I think it's offending you. Because I don't know if it is or if it isn't. Mm. Do
you
I?
See, the other thing is these pit girls also serve a very important purpose. I mean, without them, Lewis Hamilton would have no idea where to park.
I suppose. But so, you know, they can put a ripped guy there and...
Exactly.
Yeah, then he'll crash.
Then you'll know where to park as well. Two red lollipops. Just touching on an article that we discussed last week where former Formula One champion Nico Rosberg said earlier in Jan that he could be persuaded to come out of retirement if the sport was taken to Las Vegas or returned to South Africa. And there was a poll that was run on Wheels 24, and out of the 23,000, 13,599 votes said yes, F1 is huge in SA and it will be amazing. There were 1,791 votes who said no, there's not enough interest, and 7,500 votes said no, there's too much corruption. What is your take? Do you think we could host a Grand Prix?
We have the facilities to host the Grand Prix, but we do not have the financial wherewithal to do it.
Yeah,
it's an extremely expensive thing, and it will have to be financed somehow. And unfortunately, South Africa's government and sports department and everybody else is pretty much bankrupt. So, as much as I'd love to see a Formula One race at Kyalami, the people can't afford to pay the tickets, and government can't afford to sponsor it.
Because it has to be sponsored, doesn't it? So we pay to bring the F1 Grand Prix here.
Yeah, no, F1 is a hugely expensive thing to host. I'm an advocate for it. And I'm sure everybody else is as well. But it is very expensive. F1 doesn't, and it's not expensive because I think F1's trying to rip the ringer out of it.
Yeah.
It's just all of the regulations, all of the mandatory stuff that the country has to do, that the track has to do, that F1 imposes. Yes. That's what costs.
Because when they come out here, I mean, I'm assuming it's like a Rugby World Cup or a Soccer World Cup, like with FIFA. They're the governing body, so they tell you what has to happen and how things are run.
What I can't understand is F1 does go to countries that are worse off than South Africa. What is it exactly that's stopping us from doing it?
From doing it, Well, I'm sure there are enough brands out there that if they got together, but would they see the reward from that? I don't know what it costs. I don't know what it costs to bring a F1 Grand Prix to a country. Maybe we can Google it quickly while we're having a squiz. But I've heard some crazy numbers thrown out. Lawrence, hello.
Morning.
How's the traffic?
The suck is real.
Really, yeah. And all that hype during the week, you've just missed our chat about the F1 grid girls.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well,
Lawrence looks like he's shell-shocked, though. What time did you leave? How long were you in the traffic for?
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours, huh? Hey, coming from the east, huh? 2.5 from Pretoria. Jeez, luck. No, it's crazy out there. Absolutely crazy. Well, anyway, let's get straight into something that I think is really, really important, and that is the importance of motor industry awards. And we'll talk about the West Bank SA COTE awards that we attended last week. We were obviously out at Kyalami and then out in Pretoria on Tuesday. And
$1 billion.
A billion dollars.
I don't think there's enough money in South Africa's bank account to
$1 billion to host an F1.
There we have it.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
that's the problem.
There's the problem, isn't it? Mm. So okay. So it's definitely.
So here's the running costs. Yeah. Staffing $16 million. Grandstands $14 million. Barriers and fencing $8 million. Pit buildings $8 million. Vehicles, offices, and utilities $6 million. Miscellaneous $4.5 million.
Miscellaneous.
Insurance $1 million. That's a total of $57 million. And then there's a bunch of fees as well. F1 estimated that it's $396 million with a cost of running the race coming to $575 million. Brings the overall expense close to $1 billion to host an F1.
Yeah. We can't afford that.
And you're not going to recoup that on a 3-day weekend or a 4-day weekend. Really, you'd have to have... I mean, how many thousands of people would you have to get there?
We just at $2,000 a pop.
So you've already cut out,
90%
of the South African... market, haven't you? More.
If we want to bring motorsports to Kyalami, I think our best option is going to be World Endurance Cup racing.
Or Rallycross.
24 hours.
Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, well, for all the people that live in Kyalami, but that is what that track is made for.
Okay. Yeah, geez, like, that's a crap load of money. It really, really is a lot. Anyway,
well, no. So just to correct that, it looks like that $1 billion is to host the 19 races, $31.5 million per Grand Prix. That's the cost that they put into running one Grand Prix.
So that still becomes what?
It's
half a billion.
It's half a billion.
Half
yeah,
a billion rand. Half a billion rand just to host one Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it still poses the biggest challenge.
Jeez, like. Okay. Well, anyway, I don't think we'll see that this year. Maybe next if we're lucky. If we sell enough new cars in 2018. So I wanted to talk to you guys. You're both obviously motoring journalists, and I want to unpack the prestige and, you know, the Car of the Year competition has been running for
32
years. And, you know, it really, really is, I reckon, the pinnacle of motor industry awards in South Africa. And then obviously, you know, you get the World Car of the Year as well. How important are these awards to the industry, to consumers? I mean, what is your take on that, guys?
I think they're more important to the manufacturers themselves. Be able to say, I had World Car of the Year, European Car of the Year, South African Car of the Year. It's that trophy in the cabinet.
Mm-hmm. And then just obviously looking at the cars that are competing in this year's COTI Awards, is there anything that stands out for you? If I just run through the list quickly, there's obviously the Q5. I mean, give me your take on these cars. Let's discuss the cars a bit. Me being the non-car person, I'm strictly on looks. Q5?
Not my money.
I found the Q5 to be a bit bland.
Yeah, it's a very good car. It's very competent and everything, but it's grey.
Yeah, wallpaper.
It's like wallpaper.
Okay, all right. The Alfa Romeo Giulia.
Fantastic car, and personally, I hope it wins.
Oh, do you? Is that your pick? So, if you were the voting man, that's...
If I had to spend money on any one of those cars, that would be the one I'd buy.
Okay.
No, I'm hedging my bets against the Peugeot 3008.
You think that one might take it?
That's a good car as well.
It's a brilliant car, an all-around good package. It's a good looker, it drives well, it's priced well.
Yeah.
And in the segment that it goes up against, it's probably one of the top
cars in that segment.
Look, all the cars, all the finalists that are there are really, really good vehicles.
Absolutely.
They deserve to be there. And once again, it's, you know, you're not weighting them against...
Against the other cars in their category, in their segment.
Come on, let's be honest. At the end of the day, the perception is this car won against everything else. So it is against each other as well.
And we've been trying for the last 2 or 3 years to educate the consumers on that exact fact that these cars are not going up against each other, but rather the other cars in their segment, because...
But that's no fun.
They, when it comes to the judging itself, the jury members will score the car on style, interior, drivability, pricing, etc., etc., etc. And then when that's all done, they score that car, they weight it against the other cars in its category.
Yeah, correct.
And that gives them an overall score. Nobody knows, except for like 5 people, before the banquet when the reveal is made, who the winner is. Nobody, not even the jury members, know.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool.
I think that is nice, you know. So you are arriving, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of matter about who's going to take it, and you only really find out once it's revealed.
Martin loves the Giulia. I love the Giulia, but I don't think it is a car of the year because it's too expensive.
Okay.
It's a really expensive car. It's a brilliant car.
Yes.
But it's too expensive.
The 5 Series...
Even more expensive.
And wallpapery.
And very wallpapery.
Porsche Panamera.
What do you mean wallpapery?
Excellent.
Wallpaper, it disappears into the background. If you lost it at the airport, you'd never find it again.
And so if you parked it next to the old one, you wouldn't recognize it either.
Yeah.
What did you say? It just doesn't stand out.
No,
it's bland.
Mm.
Why do you think that is? Do you think that we've just become, you know...
3-box styling, lazy designers...
And BMW started listening to their customers.
Yeah.
They started listening to customer clinics. Instead of building the cars that BMW used to make, they built the cars that people say they want.
So that goes down... No, that's exactly right. And I think there's a massive point there, because Steve Jobs says, we give people things that they don't know that they want.
Yes.
Whereas what he's saying is BMW are giving people things that they say they want.
So consumers saying we want cup holders, and BMW are saying, okay, cool, we'll put... Well, not just BMW, I'm saying everybody.
Pod cars are coming, man.
Yeah.
You don't need to have, you know, you just need a couch with four wheels. It's a pod car.
Give it 20 years and it's, yeah.
You know what? I think there's a place for that because a lot of consumers drive a car to travel, not you know, not to necessarily stand out in the car.
Yeah, it's just a mode of transport from A to B. That's all it needs to do.
A lot of consumers just do it for travel, but I think South Africans are much more fanatical about their cars than the rest of the world's consumers.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think what drives that is our lack of public transport.
Yeah.
Whereas in London and in New York, you've got plenty of public transport, so cars disappear. They're almost like just something to get from
it's
A to B.
Yeah.
It's a tool because you've got the public transport, and people haven't grown up with this, I need a car.
Mm.
Whereas in South Africa, you grow up with, you know, if I want to get to the next party, I have to have a car.
Well, that's a case of, you know, you turn 18 and you're kind of going, well, you know, I wonder if I'm going to get a car for my birthday.
So, you know, a lot of these cars are all designed internationally. Absolutely. They're not designed here.
Yeah.
So it's that, you know, a little bit of that influence is probably coming across as wallpaper because that's what the international consumer sees.
You know, yeah, at the end of the day, and that's why I'm hedging my bets on something like the Peugeot 3008.
Yeah.
It's a people's car, it's a people's mover, it's a form of, and it's good looking, and it's priced well. Now, it is the European car of the year.
Okay.
And there is a trend that shows that generally when cars win elsewhere in the world,
then they can
it's
win.
Gonna, if it doesn't win, it's going to be in at least the top three.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Look, we were fortunate enough to be able to, you know, hop into one or two of these vehicles and, you know, get taken onto the skid pan, doing that lane change and, the checking for over and understand. One of the cars that I happened to jump in was the Porsche Panamera. Wow.
Amazing.
I mean,
machine.
It really, geez, like, what a vehicle.
A
vehicle.
It is an incredible car. We tested it on the mountain passes down in Cape Town last year.
You know, and then you get out of something like that and you get into a Kia Picanto. Now, me as not a motoring person, of course, you know, if somebody was going to give one of those two vehicles
and
away.
That's why they don't go up against each other.
Exactly. That is why the jury members have to be within the motoring industry for five years. And then spend 2 years as a trainee
juror
before they can become an actual juror.
Yeah.
That makes you very objective.
Okay.
And you, these guys know what they're talking about when they can sit there and they go, what's that rattle?
Yeah.
Where's that coming from?
Yeah.
It's something that you wouldn't hear. Maybe I wouldn't even hear it.
Mm.
But these guys pick up on the tiniest little nuances. And they get down to that point where they're like, okay, well, that panel's rattling. Well, interior fitment, marked down.
Jeez, like. Well, I see two cars that are in the same segment that are obviously competing. A is the Picanto, and then the Suzuki Ignis, which has got some really, really, you know, positive. I've heard positive feedback about it.
Quirky and
wacky,
and then look, it's a good car, and it is cheap as chips. And when we're talking about getting people mobile, the Ignis is it.
Yeah.
I have very little negative things to say about the Ignis. It's just not for me.
Just not for you. But in terms of what you get and what you pay for, it sounds like it's you know, from a value for money point of view.
Very much.
It's a decent vehicle.
In its class, it's very competitive.
So now
tell me the winner of last year, the Opel
Astra. Opel Astra. Yeah.
Opel Astra. Is there a bias not to have it in the finalist in this year? Or has it got an equal chance?
No, look, last year's car
can't be in this year because it's not launched. But if Opel had to have come out with
a new car,
let's say a new Astra, has it got an equal chance?
Yes.
Okay.
Opel has won back to back.
Like Porsche.
Yeah.
Yes.
Back in 1993, I think it was.
Yeah. Okay. So there's no skew to kind of leaving out last year's winner as a brand because Opel's not on this list.
Well, they're not because as we all know, GM went Opel sort of they've gone their own way.
Yes.
Now.
No. Yeah. Fair enough. No, yeah. I'm more addressing the point that there's no bias in the jury or in the judges that kind of say, oh, last year's winner. You know,
the only reason why there isn't an Opel in this year's competition is because the only Opel that was launched in time
was
to be eligible was a Crossland, which is a Peugeot 3008 under the skin.
Okay.
All right. So, okay, there we go. Land Rover Discovery, fantastic on the inside, I am not a fan. I love the old box, the hard kind of Land Rover, you know, that kind of look. And this
and
is
that's
just
why, unfortunately, as much as it is a brilliant car,
yeah,
it, I don't think it's
good. It's a phenomenal car.
I don't think there's anything there's anything different to, you know, the previous Land Rovers.
No, and it's the, I think the rear end styling is, from day one, is what has hurt its chances. Look, it's a brilliant car, but when you put it up against its cousin, the Range Rover, you sit there going, why?
What's the difference?
Yeah. Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
look, the new Discovery is a big improvement on the old one, but it doesn't do anything that, say, an Audi Q7 or a Volkswagen Touareg or any one of those don't do, because it's gone soft now.
Yeah.
And if you were weighting it against others in its category it's just
average.
It very much so.
But if you guys are saying that, then how come this is the one that's in the finals and not any of its other, you know, counterparts? Or no, because it is. It's a standalone in terms of its category. There's no direct competitor in the...
You know how the finalists are selected?
Yes.
Okay, so it's we start with 25.
Five, yeah. And then
that are voted on by the entire guild. And then it's whittled down to 10.
Yeah.
So in the production year, it might have fallen... inside or outside of the date parameters that they've been given, or it's not eligible because it was
not available for testing in time.
Yes, or it was launched here but not overseas, or it was launched overseas
and not here. Okay, tell me the Volvo S90.
Fantastic car,
and in that sense, saying that it's better than the 5 Series.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. It stands a better chance, but when you've got two vehicles in the top 10 that are competing in the same, you're already sitting there going, okay, well, that's it.
That's it. Which one do you choose? The Toyota CHR. I happen to go around the dynamic handling track, and this is a 1.2 litre little, and I couldn't believe it. I was properly impressed.
It's actually a cracking car. All it needs is boot space and rear windows.
Yeah, so you can and so you can see out the back.
Yeah,
the back windows don't open.
No, they do open, but I mean, so it's like sitting inside a motorcycle helmet. It's this little light slot surrounding you.
Okay, and then obviously the last thing is the Peugeot 3008, which you say is
that's where I've got my money. And you know, I was wrong last year.
Yeah,
I was wrong the year.
Did you
before.
Also think Tiguan?
Yes, and the funny thing is, though, most people would sort of tend to agree, but once again, once the scoring has been taken care of, you just never know. One jury member's score could throw everything out of whack.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and once again, winning the award, it's major props for the manufacturers.
Absolutely.
And I'm not sure, I might be speaking out of turn here, but there is a direct correlation between sales and winning.
Yeah.
And people go, wow, that's the car of the year.
I think a few years ago, Hyundai Elantra got a massive boost.
Yeah.
Because Audi A4,
you
way
start
back when it
moving
won,
units
same story.
Because that's the car of the year. That must mean it's a good car.
You know, that's something as a consumer that I would take into consideration. I mean, obviously, if the Porsche wins, you know, I'm not even going to think about it. But when there's a vehicle that you can kind of go, okay, hang on a sec, you know, that's in my kind of... you know, my price range, I'd definitely consider it because experts have told me that that is a good buy, you know. Not being a motoring person, we judge our cars on how they look.
28 of the top motoring journalists in the country
have agreed that is a really, really good vehicle. So I think that really plays a, you know, important role from a consumer point of view to get the opinion of, you know, our motoring journalists, who I must say are, I think, you know, really high regarded in terms of motor industry journalists. And I would say we could compete head on head with, you know, any journalists around the world.
Yeah,
I think having prestigious journalists preside over a competition like this is takes the you know, it voting on a car of the year is not a popularity contest.
Absolutely.
And it shouldn't be a popularity contest because then the wrong things are going to be voted on. You know, these cars need to be taken through the ringer by these journalists, and you know, the journalists know how to take the cars through the ringer.
Yes.
Because this is their life. This is what they do every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have anyone else take the car through the ringer, because what do? They probably sit in their car going to work and coming home.
Yeah.
Whereas these journalists really take the car through
actually,
their paces.
You know.
So, you know, I take my hat off to them, because I think it's quite a hard job.
Okay, well, you guys are sitting here. We're not involved in the 2018 World Car Award, but I don't know if you guys... So the finalist there is the Alfa Romeo Giulia, and I'm assuming that's the same vehicle that's in our awards.
It's not the, is it not the QR that's...
The QV.
No, the QV.
No, Alfa Romeo Giulia. Then there's the BMW X3, the Kia Stinger, the Land Rover Discovery, the Mazda CX-5, Nissan Leaf, the Range Rover Velar, Toyota Camry, Volkswagen T-Roc, which I had a look at. It actually looks like a very, very nice vehicle. And the Volvo XC60.
The Camry is in there.
The Camry, yeah.
It just goes to show you, it isn't a popularity contest. It is about what is a good car for a consumer.
Absolutely.
And I think it's tough to do, eh? It's really tough to do.
Yeah, I don't think it can be an easy thing to do.
Like I said, I take my hats off to the jury members. So these guys, they've been in the industry. Some of these guys have been around 30, 40 years. They've been in the motoring industry in South Africa. Some of these guys were here since the first Coty, way back in 1980 something or other. When I don't even think Fasano was born yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, just getting into the guild is hard enough. I mean, we know.
Yes.
You spend years as a probie and everything. And then once you become a fully fledged member, then you have to spend 5 years, and then it's 2 years as a trainee. So these guys have spent a lot of time doing this.
Yeah. Well, hats off to them. I think they do a fantastic job. And the announcement of the finalists is 13th of March. That's when mid-March. That's the gala evening. And obviously, stay tuned to all of our social media channels because we'll be there live on the ground, and it's going to be really, really good. Let's get into our vehicle review. Martin, I think you prepared a little bit of what did you guys call it? What are you on the chat? You guys were going mad with each other.
I'm in the baby brother. Okay. He was in the big brother.
The big brother. Mm-hmm. Well, so, look, I mean, just as a non-motoring kind of person, it is a fantastic car.
Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
He was in the Land Cruiser 200. I'm currently in the Land Cruiser Prado.
Okay.
Which is the baby brother.
Yes.
But the luxury.
Oh, the luxury spec one.
Yes.
And nice car to drive.
Nobody moved out of my way this morning, and that's what sort of irked me. It's a giant SUV, and I've got my flicker on, and nobody's letting me in.
Yeah.
So see, I never had that problem with a big
Because you've got a V8.
No, not only that.
And you just rev, and everybody moves out of
Not only that. It literally fills up a car from the car in front of you, from left rear view mirror to right front. So
it's like
mirror.
A truck.
So if you
it is a truck. It is actually a truck.
Yeah. I don't like driving behind cars that are bigger than mine because I can't see past them.
You see, now the thing with
this Land Cruiser, you don't get
the thing with this Land Cruiser is you are actually eye level with the trucks. Roof of the Ford Ranger Bucky next to you.
It's massive. This thing, it didn't even fit in the parking bays at the office.
It didn't.
So you have to kind of, you know, park across two bays.
Almost.
Well, tell us a little bit about the car.
Well, it's a permanent all-wheel drive system.
Yeah.
So it's a proper off-roader, high range, low range. There's a V8 under the bonnet, a twin turbo V8. Unfortunately, it's a diesel V8. So it's not really as much of a powerhouse as you'd imagine.
Okay.
There's a lot of torque, and it comes on very early, and it stays on pretty much across the rev range. So it's not fast, but it's relentless.
Yes, okay.
Also, it weighs 2.7 tons.
So more a long-distance runner than a 100-meter sprinter.
Absolutely.
It's an overland adventure vehicle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want to ask a question, Martin, and it's been sort of plaguing me the whole week. What is your fuel economy?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing.
All right. For my week with a car... the trip computer registered 13.6 liters per 100.
Which is actually
remarkable for the size,
exactly. I was expecting
truck.
More, yeah.
I'm averaging 10.6.
And I did not try to save fuel. You know how I drive.
Okay. So that's not... That's
probably the worst the average driver could expect.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually remarkable if you consider that a similarly powered petrol Land Cruiser 200 would use literally twice as much.
Jeez, like, okay, so that's, I mean...
So that's a good thing.
George, compared to your car, what is your, is that, are we...
No, you can't compare.
Okay, you can't compare.
No, so if I drive nicely, I'll get 13. If I drive like you, you know, it gets a lot higher.
Okay.
I mean, I don't drive like a maniac all the time, so I'm probably averaging around 14, 15.
All right.
But if I drive really nicely on long trips and stuff, my car comes down to 12, 13. So 13 for a huge car like that is not bad.
Yeah.
It's really not bad.
And then obviously it will come down on longer distances.
Oh, look, on the open road, it drops down to 10.
Yeah.
It drops down into the trees. Ah, no problem.
There's the trick.
No problem.
Yeah.
Open road. But this was about 60% town driving and 40% freeway, of which a lot was dense traffic.
Which is a good representation of
that's what you're going to be doing in day-to-day driving, aren't you?
Now, my big question, how much?
1.35 million.
Yikes.
Mm. Is that a lot of money for everything that you get?
It's about average.
Yes, but there's a bit of a catch to it.
Okay.
The other large luxury SUVs you could get for similar money are all much faster, far more modern, and drive like cars instead of like a big lumbering truck.
But if you took them out into the bush?
No, you can't.
They're not going to compete with each other there, or are they?
No, but they do compete on price and on spec level.
Okay.
That's the problem. So if someone sits with the two brochures in front of them and they'll compare, okay, 7 seats, leather, heated seats, electric, if you look at it, the bland numbers, the Land Cruiser probably isn't such a great deal.
But you could take it out. You could take it to the Horn of Africa.
You can take it right across the world.
Oh, yeah.
And in comfort as well, because that's actually the big thing it majors on.
It's designed for.
All these other modern SUVs, and all of them, the soft roaders, and they're biased towards on-road usage.
Okay, so they're built for on-road usage and
which
have off-road capabilities.
A little bit of off-road capabilities, which means stiff suspension, low-profile tires, so... And that's where the Land Cruiser actually comes into its own.
Mm.
Long travel, soft suspension, lots of body rolls. I mean, it cannot go around a corner at speed.
Okay.
But it is supremely comfortable.
Yeah.
It is a sensory deprivation tank. It's dead quiet inside.
It's a couch with wheels.
It's a couch with wheels. It's like driving a living room.
Fantastic. I mean, it sounds phenomenal. And it is the kind of car that you do want to just, get in and go, okay, cool, we'll see you in three months' time.
Yep.
Yeah. And... And maybe never ever come back.
And you can take six of your mates with you.
And you can take six of your mates with you. Well, that's fantastic. So Martin, thanks very much for that. Some nice insight there. And but 10 minutes to go. Let's jump into our tech segment. I see that the government has released details on electric vehicles plans. So the trade and industry.
No. Let's just correct that. Sometime in the near future.
Yeah, Trade and Industry Department expects in the near future to announce additional
details. I've never seen near future on a calendar.
I actually have
2045.
Yeah. I mean, why not put a freaking date on it? Just give us a goal
Monday,
to achieve.
We're talking about 2022 then.
But more than likely. So
come on, Bulelani, you can give us a date. Give us a freaking date.
So they're saying that they're going to announce additional details on the master plan and associated
support
programs.
When is this announcement going to happen? Is there a date of the announcement?
Off-sona.
No. No date, yeah.
Come on, give us a date.
Do you think that, should we just give them a date?
Yeah, let's give them a date.
Well, 14th of February.
Okay,
how about Tuesday?
Yeah, exactly. But do you think this is a problem? So it's all big, it's all hearsay.
No, I don't think it won't happen.
The discussions are happening.
Yeah, it's happening.
These guys obviously can't commit to two dates, like
you
said.
Yeah, I think we'd get excited if there was a commitment date, because it'll give us something to shoot for. John F. Was it Kennedy gave a time period for going to the moon?
Yes.
It gets people excited when there's a date. Even if you miss that date slightly, that's fine. But
there's still a stake in the ground there.
There's a stake in the ground. We're shooting for something.
How long have we been waiting for digital migration?
Yep.
I think we're about 10 years past the deadline.
Just give it a deadline.
Well, I see that there's an incentive for the investment. So Nico Vermeulen, who's the director of the National Association of Automobile Manufacturers of South Africa, said that the master plan referred to development program for the motor industry post-2020 that would run until 2035 following the expiry
of
the
current automotive. So why not just say by 2020?
By 2020 we'll have something, or 2022
something
we'll have
like
something.
That. But
is this for the charging stations? And
so this will be available across the board, and anybody would be able to make use of the incentive to produce electric vehicles. So what they're saying is they're obviously going to invest in the production of electric vehicles in South Africa, not so much and more for export than sales on the ground, because they deem our market to be very small, which are... think is going to surprise a lot of people.
Well, our market is small compared to other countries. However, we are we're not as expensive to manufacture in, and that's why the export market is one of the biggest draw cards for manufacturing. Which is good.
Which is a very, very good thing.
Come Tesla, bring your cars here and manufacture them.
I mean, I see the first C63 AMG rolled off, the full production for export rolled off the line last week. Is their plant in Utenag? Is it PE? Well, I mean,
It's for the export market, which is great, and then we get the spin-off of that. We get job creation, all that stuff, which is great.
That is something that is happening with a lot of the manufacturers. The BAIC bike, they just open up a massive, or they're in the
process
of opening a massive plant in PE. Mm-hmm. There are so many vehicles that are manufactured here that we never see.
Yeah.
They roll straight off the assembly line onto a ship.
And away they go.
Yep.
And so Ford, Toyota, BMW.
But this is obviously a skill set and something that we're very, very good at.
I don't know if it's about skill or about cost.
Do you think it's more about cost? Then
it's probably more about cost.
Because our labor's cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, our labor's probably cheaper. I mean, our rand isn't as strong as some other currencies, and so it makes a lot of sense to export vehicles from South Africa because it's probably cheaper to manufacture.
So anyway, I think it's all good for the industry, and if they are going to invest, and they are going to, there is definitely growth.
Look, I think a sustainable long-term plan for South Africa would be to develop electric vehicles in-house and build them here for export. Our current technology and our infrastructure simply doesn't really allow for widespread adoption of electric vehicles.
Sure.
Due to our distances between cities.
Correct.
And also electricity supply constraints.
Yeah, yeah, but on the on the positive side, a lot of people's vehicles are not used for long distance travel. Mm. I mean, I look at my wife, for instance. She does. The car's not even hot by the time she gets to work.
Yeah.
Sure.
Her car's older than the mileage on it, and that's just the nature of how she commutes.
And that's why I think for the time being in South Africa, hybrid vehicles are the answer.
Yes.
Yeah.
That short little jaunt between your house and the office,
switch
all electric.
On. Yes.
The engine only switches on when you need to charge the battery.
Yeah. Like the Volvo I drove last year.
BMW X5, the Prius, all those. That is where we should be.
Come on, let's be ambitious. Full electric vehicles. We can do it.
I think so. Well,
Give it a date.
There's a story coming up now. But something that's really, really nice, and we spoke about public transport and stuff, and it's 2018, and I was reading the story going, is this such, I mean, it's a massive thing for the consumers that are using it, but just so that you know, the Golden Arrow bus service, Golden Arrow buses, we see them all over our roads, has launched an electronic ticketing system, the automatic fare collection, which might phase out the old printer tickets. So modern consumers can now walk onto the bus with a card and have it scanned. Like the Gautrain train. Mm. So, it's just my only thinking is why has it taken so long to get there? Is it a cost thing?
Because they're still put the ticket conductor out of business.
Yeah,
with that silver thing that punches the tickets.
Do you remember those things? Then you used to wear a belt and you used to clip the change out of there. Like take four of those.
You're giving away your age.
Oh no! I used to catch a bus to and from school. We used to drive past our girls' school. So our school was on the top of the hill and the girls' school was down the hill, and we'd come past, and we did have a nickname for our girls' school. We used to call them, it was the dog pound. And you'd just have 45 guys in the bus all barking at the window as we drove past the girls' school. They absolutely hated us.
I wonder where the dog pound was, in the bus or at the school.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so well done on Golden Arrow for implementing the system, which I think is good. And I also think, it's...
It's not like we can't do it. And I'll give you an example. South Africa's banking system is one of the best in the world from a technology point of view.
Yeah.
It is one of the best in the world.
Well, FNB was voted Bank of the Year 2016, weren't they?
Exactly. Yeah. So our entire... we can do it. We can absolutely do it. So, let's stop focusing on the reasons why we can't have charging stations and why we can't have this and why we can't... And focus on give it a date... And
work towards it.
Find ways to make it happen.
Absolutely.
I get so irritated with people that focus on the negative. Are those ducks?
Mm-hmm.
They're circling.
There's ducks outside you, and they're going mad.
Circling, going
hearing
crazy.
My headphones, I'm going, I wonder.
Yeah, you see the ducks want electric vehicles as well. They're sick of these fumes.
With us. Exactly. Well, anyway, George, here it comes. So Audi say fully electric car will be available in South Africa in 2019.
There we go.
So
well done.
So German premium vehicle brand Audi is to launch a fully electric vehicle in South Africa in 2019. And
Audi's just got more points.
Probably be another 10 fully electric vehicles available in the domestic market from other vehicle brands. So we should see at least, you know, the adoption of fully electrics in 2019. The only problem that they say is you probably are going to be able to do about 500 Ks on a full charge.
That's a lot.
That's fine.
You can get 500.
That's a lot.
You're usually averaging about 380.
True.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a fantastic vehicle. I mean, it really is beautiful. But, I mean, Audi do make pretty cars.
Yeah.
They really, really do. So, you know.
My question is, will the government incentivize these electric vehicles the way overseas governments do?
Well, here it says, yeah.
If they make enough noise, they will.
If you want to have electrification, this is good for the environment, but there have to be benefits. And this is the MD of BMW of Audi, and he said that the South African government reliance on tax revenue from the fuel levy was a challenge. So obviously we get a lot of money out of...
And of course carbon tax.
Carbon tax. So,
they're not making money off of you anymore.
You know, so are they going to...
Just put the VAT trade up. Come on.
Exactly, which is what they're going to do, aren't they?
Yes.
So, that's really, 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 really exciting. So 2019, I mean, I'm all for electric vehicles. And I think we're going to wrap the show in a minute or so. But, Martin, you've been...
I love electrics.
Okay, but you've been a petrol head since you were 4 years old. And you can you see that change coming? Do you think it's going to happen?
Going to turn into an electric head.
Electric head. Yeah, what are we going to call you guys?
Sparkies.
Sparkies. Yeah, exactly. Jesus.
Look, I love electric vehicles. I would still... I like the idea of a hybrid.
Mm.
Just in case I ran out of electricity. Okay. I've got a small little backup.
Yeah.
So somebody's come out with a competitor to Tesla's electric truck. Called the Nikola.
Yes.
funny that Nikola Tesla. I was watching the review on this thing the other day, and those trucks can add a couple of tons to their payload or to their to what they can carry because they don't have the engine, the gearbox, all of that stuff that a regular truck has. And acceleration of an electric truck is 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 5 seconds. Empty load, of course.
But
full load, 0 to 100 in 20 seconds in a linear acceleration and up a hill. So,
and we're talking tons here.
Tons and tons.
Yeah.
Where they're advocating for these trucks in the United States, obviously, and that's going to come. But it will be so good for the South African economy to have electric trucks on our roads because these things are so economical that it's not costly to drive,
which will obviously naturally bring, which should bring, I mean, if everything was going to work smoothly,
brings costs down.
So food prices should come down. I mean, we could actually live in an awesome
universe. A lot of the cost of a product is getting it to its destination.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if we can reduce those, so we all for electric. Guys, thanks very much. Another fantastic show. I can't believe how quickly an hour can go. And I learn more every day when I sit with you people, which is fantastic. So thank you for always educating me. I hope you guys have a fantastic week out there. And that's a wrap.
This is CliffCentral.com.